Memorials of the Faithful by Abdu'l-Bahá. Your reader is Mary Ellen Baker. This is Tape 2, Side 1, continuing the memorial of Agha Mirza Mahmud and Agha Riza, page 39. There were times when they had not more than 2 or 3 hours' sleep out of the 24, because once the friends had eaten their meal, these two would be busy collecting and washing up the dishes and cooking utensils. This would take them till midnight, and only then would they rest. At daybreak they would rise, pack everything, and set out again in front of the howdah of Baha'u'llah. See what a vital service they were able to render, and for what bounty they were singled out. From the start of the journey at Baghdad to the arrival at Constantinople, they walked close beside Baha'u'llah. They made every one of the friends happy. They brought rest and comfort to all. They prepared whatever anyone asked. Agha Riza and Mirza Mahmud were the very essence of God's love, utterly detached from all but God. In all that time, no one ever heard either of them raise his voice. They never hurt nor offended anyone. They were trustworthy, loyal, true. Baha'u'llah showered blessings upon them. They were continually entering his presence, and he would be expressing his satisfaction with them. Mirza Mahmud was a youth when he arrived in Baghdad from Kashan. Agha Riza became a believer in Baghdad. The spiritual condition of the two was indescribable. There was in Baghdad a company of 7 leading believers who lived in a single small room because they were destitute. They could hardly keep body and soul together, but they were so spiritual, so blissful, that they thought themselves in heaven. Sometimes they would chant prayers all night long until the day broke. Days they would go out to work, and by nightfall one would have earned 10 paras, another perhaps 20 paras, another 40 or 50. These sums would be spent for the evening meal. On a certain day one of them made 20 paras, while the rest had nothing at all. The one with the money bought some dates and shared them with the others. That was dinner for 7 people. They were perfectly content with their frugal life, supremely happy. These 2 honored men devoted their days to all that is best in human life. They had seeing eyes. They were mindful and aware. They had hearing ears and were fair of speech. Their sole desire was to please Baha'u'llah. To them, nothing was a bounty at all except service at his holy threshold. After the time of the supreme affliction, they were consumed with sorrow, like candles flickering away. They longed for death and stayed firm in the covenant and labored hard and well to spread that day star's faith. They were close and trusted companions of Abdu'l-Bahá and could be relied on in all things. They were always lowly, humble, unassuming, evanescent. In all that long period they never uttered a word which had to do with self. And at the last, during the absence of Abdu'l-Bahá, they took their flight to the kingdom of unfading glory. I sorrowed much because I was not with them when they died. Although absent in body, I was there in my heart and mourning over them. But to outward seeming, I did not bid them goodbye. This is why I grieve. Unto them both be salutations and praise. Upon them be compassion and glory. May God give them a home in paradise under the lote tree's shade. May they be immersed in tears of light close beside their Lord, the Mighty, the All-Powerful. Pidar Jan of Khazvin. The late Pidar Jan was among those believers who immigrated to Baghdad. He was a godly old man, enamored of the Well-Beloved. In the garden of divine love, he was like a rose full-blown. He arrived there in Baghdad and spent his days and nights communing with God and chanting prayers. And although he walked the earth, he traveled the heights of heaven. To obey the law of God, he took up a trade, for he had nothing. He would bundle a few pairs of socks under his arm and peddle them as he wandered through the streets and bazaars, and thieves would rob him of his merchandise. Finally, he was obliged to lay the socks across his outstretched palms as he went along, but he would get to chanting a prayer, and one day he was surprised to find that they had stolen the socks laid out on his 2 hands from before his eyes. His awareness of this world was clouded, for he journeyed through another. He dwelt in ecstasy. He was a man drunken, bedazzled. For some time, that is how he lived in Iraq. Almost daily, he was admitted to the presence of Baha'u'llah. His name was Abdullah, but the friends bestowed on him the title of Pidarjan, Father Dear, for he was a loving father to them all. At last, under the sheltering care of Baha'u'llah, he took flight to the seat of truth in the presence of the potent king. Footnote, that quotation is from the Quran 54-55. End of footnote. May God make fragrant his sepulchre with the outpouring rains of his mercy, and cast upon him the eye of divine passion. Salutations be unto him, and praise. Sheikh Sadiqi Yazdi. Another of those who emigrated to Baghdad was Sheikh Sadiq of Yazd, a man esteemed and righteous as his name, Sadiq. Footnote, this word has a number of meanings, including truthful, loyal, and just. End of footnote. He was a towering palm in the groves of heaven, a star flaming in the skies of the love of God. It was during the Iraq period that he hastened to the presence of Baha'u'llah. His detachment from the things of this world and his attachment to the life of the spirit are indescribable. He was love embodied, tenderness personified. Day and night he commemorated God. Utterly unconscious of this world and all that is therein, he dwelt continually on God, remaining submerged in supplications and prayers. Most of the time, tears poured from his eyes. The Blessed Beauty singled him out for special favor, and whenever he turned his attention toward Sadiq, his loving kindness was clear to see. On a certain day, they brought word that Sadiq was at the point of death. I went to his bedside and found him breathing his last. He was suffering from ileus, an abdominal pain and swelling. I hurried to Baha'u'llah and described his condition. Go, he said, place your hand on the distended area and speak the words, O thou the healer, Ya Shafi. I went back. I saw that the affected part had swollen up to the size of an apple. It was hard as stone, in constant motion, twisting and coiling about itself like a snake. I placed my hand upon it. I turned toward God, and humbly beseeching him, I repeated the words, O thou the healer. Instantly the sick man rose up. The ileus vanished. The swelling was carried off. This personified spirit lived contentedly in Iraq until the day when Baha'u'llah's convoy wended its way out of Baghdad. As bidden, Sadiq remained behind in that city, but his longing beat so passionately within him that after the arrival of Baha'u'llah at Mosul, he could endure the separation no more. Shoeless, hatless, he ran out alongside the courier going to Mosul. Ran and ran until, on that barren plain, with mercy all about him, he fell to his rest. May God give him to drink from, quote, a wine cup tempered at the camphor fountain, unquote, from the Quran 76:5, and send down crystal waters on his grave. May God perfume his dust in that desert place with musk, and cause to descend there range on range of light. Shah Muhammad Amin. Shah Muhammad, who had the title of Amin, the Trusted One, was among the earliest of believers and most deeply enamored. He had listened to the divine summons in the flower of his youth and set his face toward the kingdom. He had ripped from his gaze the veils of idle suppositions and had won his heart's desire, neither the fancies current among the people nor the reproaches of which he was the target turned him back. Unshaken, he stood and faced a sea of troubles. Staunch with the strength of the Advent day, he confronted those who tried to thwart him and block his path. The more they sought to instill doubts in his mind, the stronger he became. The more they tormented him, the more progress he made. He was a captive of the face of God, enslaved by the beauty of the All-Glorious, a flame of God's love, a jetting fountain of the knowledge of him. Love smoldered in his heart, so that he had no peace, and when he could bear the absence of the beloved one no more, he left his native home, the province of Yazd. He found the desert sands like silk under his feet. Light as the wind's breath, he passed over the mountains and across the endless plains until he stood at the door of his love. He had freed himself from the snare of separation and in Iraq he entered the presence of Baha'u'llah. Once he made his way into the home of the darling of mankind, he was emptied of every thought, released from every concern, and became the recipient of boundless favor and grace. He passed some days in Iraq and was directed to return to Persia. There he remained for a time, frequenting the believers, and his pure breathings stirred each of them anew, so that each one yearned over the faith and became more restless, more impatient than before. Later he arrived at the most great prison with Mirza Abdul Hassan, the second Amin. On this journey he met with severe hardships, for it was extremely difficult to find a way into the prison. Finally, he was received by Baha'u'llah in the public baths. Mirza Abu Hassan was so overwhelmed at the majestic presence of his Lord that he shook, stumbled, and fell to the floor. His head was injured and the blood flowed out. Amin, that is Shah Muhammad, was honored with the title of the Trusted One, and bounties were showered upon him. Full of eagerness and love, taking with him tablets from Baha'u'llah, he hastened back to Persia, where, at all times worthy of trust, he labored for the cause. His services were outstanding, and he was a consolation to the believers' hearts. There was none to compare with him for energy, enthusiasm, and zeal, and no man's services could equal his. He was a haven amidst the people, known everywhere for his devotion to the Holy Threshold, widely acclaimed by the friends. He never rested for a moment. Not one night did he spend on a bed of ease. Never did he lay down his head on comfort's pillow. He was continuously in flight, soaring as the birds do, running like a deer, guesting in the desert of oneness, alone and swift. He brought joy to all the believers. To all, his coming was good news. To every seeker, he was a sign and token. He was enamored of God, a vagrant in the desert of God's love. Like the wind, he traveled over the face of the plains, and he was restive on the heights of the hills. He was in a different country every day, and in yet another land by nightfall. Never did he rest, never was he still. He was forever rising up to serve. But then they took him prisoner in Azerbaijan, in the town of Mian Duab. He fell a prey to some ruthless Kurds, a hostile band who asked no questions of the innocent, defenseless man. Believing that this stranger, like other foreigners, wished ill to the Kurdish people, and taking him for worthless, they killed him. When news of his martyrdom reached the prison, all the captives grieved, and they shed tears for him, resigned to God and undefended as he was in his last hour. Even on the countenance of Baha'u'llah there were visible tokens of grief. A tablet, infinitely tender, was revealed by the Supreme Pen, commemorating the man who died on that calamitous plain, and many other tablets were sent down concerning him. Today, under the shadowing mercy of God, he dwells in the bright heavens. He communes with the birds of holiness, and in the assemblage of splendors he is immersed in light. The memory and praise of him shall remain, till the end of time, in the pages of books and on the tongues and lips of men. Unto him be salutations and praise. Upon him be the glory of the All-Glorious. Upon him be the most great mercy of God. Mashhadi Fatah. Mashhadi Fatah was personified spirit. He was devotion itself. Brother to Haji Ali Askar, of the same pure lineage, through the latter he came into the faith. Like the twins, Castor and Pollux, the two kept together in one spot, and both were illuminated with the light of belief. In all things, the two were united as a pair. They shared the same certitude and faith, the same conscience, and made their way out of Azerbaijan to Adrianople, immigrating at the same time. In every circumstance of their life, they lived as one individual. Their disposition, their aims, their religion, character, behavior, faith, certitude, knowledge, all were one. Even in the most great prison, they were constantly together. Mashhadi Fatah possessed some merchandise. This was all he owned in the world. He had entrusted it to persons in Adrianople, and later on those unrighteous people did away with the goods. Thus, in the pathway of God, he lost whatever he possessed. He passed his days perfectly content in the most great prison. He was utterly selflessness. From him, no one ever heard a syllable to indicate that he existed. He was always in a certain corner of the prison, silently meditating, occupied with the remembrance of God, at all times spiritually alert and mindful, in a state of supplication. Then came the supreme affliction. He could not tolerate the anguish of parting with Baha'u'llah, and after Baha'u'llah's passing, he died of grief. Blessed is he, again blessed is he. Glad tidings to him, again glad tidings to him. Upon him be the glory of the All-Glorious. Nabil of Qa'im. This distinguished man, Mullah Muhammad Ali, that is, Nabil of Qa'im was his title, was one of those whose hearts were drawn to Baha'u'llah before the declaration of the Bab. It was then that he drank the red wine of knowledge from the hands of the cupbearer of grace. It happened that a prince who was the son of Mir Asadullah Khan, Prince of Qa'im, was commanded to remain as a political hostage in Tehran. He was young, far away from his loving father, and Mullah Muhammad Ali was his tutor and guardian. Since the youth was a stranger in Tehran, the Blessed Beauty showed him special kindness. Many a night the young prince was Baha'u'llah's guest at the mansion, and Mullah Muhammad Ali would accompany him. This was prior to the declaration of the Bab. It was then that this chief of all trusted friends was captivated by Baha'u'llah, and wherever he went, spread loving praise of him. After the way of Islam, he also related the great miracles which he had, with his own eyes, seen Baha'u'llah perform, and the marvels he had heard. He was in ecstasy, burning up with love. In that condition, he returned to Qa'im with the prince. Later on, that eminent scholar, Akh Muhammad of Qa'im, whose title was Nabil-i Akbar, was made a mujtahid, a doctor of religious law, by the late Sheikh Murtaza. He left then for Baghdad, became an ardent follower of Baha'u'llah, and hastened back to Persia. The leading divines and mujtahids were well aware of and acknowledged his vast scholarly accomplishments, the breadth of his learning, and his high rank. When he reached Qa'im, he began openly to spread the new faith. The moment Mullah Muhammad Ali heard the name of the Blessed Beauty, he immediately accepted the Bab. Quote, "I had the honor," he said, "of meeting the Blessed Beauty in Tehran. The instant I saw him, I became his slave." Unquote. In his village of Sar Cha, this gifted, high-minded man began to teach the faith. He guided in his own family and saw to the others as well, bringing a great multitude under the law of the love of God, leading each one to the path of salvation. Up to that time, he had always been a close companion of Mir Alam Khan, the governor of Qa'im, and had rendered him important services, and had enjoyed the governor's respect and trust. Now that shameless prince turned against him in a rage on account of his religion, seized his property, and plundered it, for the Amir was terrified of Nasiruddin Shah. He banished Nabil-i Akbar and ruined Nabil of Qa'im. After throwing him in prison and torturing him, he drove him out as a homeless vagrant. To Nabil, the sudden calamity was a blessing. The sacking of his earthly goods, the expulsion into the desert, was a kingly crown and the greatest favor God could grant him. For some time he remained in Tehran, to outward seeming a pauper of no fixed abode, but inwardly rejoicing, for this is the characteristic of every soul who is firm in the covenant. He had access to the society of the great, and knew the condition of the various princes. He would, therefore, frequent some of them and give them the message. He was a consolation to the hearts of the believers, and as a drawn sword to the enemies of Baha'u'llah. He was one of those whom we read in the Quran, quote, "For the cause of God shall they strive hard, the blame of the blamer shall they not fear." The Quran 5:59. Day and night he toiled to promote the faith, and with all his might to spread abroad the clear signs of God. He would drink and drink again of the wine of God's love, was clamorous as the storm clouds, restless as the waves of the sea. Permission came, then, for him to visit the Most Great Prison, for in Tehran, as a believer, he had become a marked man. They all knew of his conversion. He had no caution, no patience, no reserve. He cared nothing for reticence, nothing for dissimulation. He was utterly fearless and in terrible danger. When he arrived at the most great prison, the hostile watchers drove him off, and try as he might, he found no way to enter. He was obliged to leave for Nazareth, where he lived for some time as a stranger, alone with his two sons, Akha Ghulam Hussein and Akha Ali Akbar, grieving and praying. At last a plan was devised to introduce him into the fortress, and he was summoned to the prison where they had immured the innocent. He came in such ecstasy as cannot be described, and was admitted to the presence of Baha'u'llah. When he entered there and lifted his eyes to the blessed beauty, he shook and trembled and fell unconscious to the floor. Baha'u'llah spoke words of loving kindness to him, and he rose again. He spent some days hidden in the barracks, after which he returned to Nazareth. The inhabitants of Nazareth wondered much about him. They told one another that he was obviously a great and distinguished man in his own country, a notable and of high rank, and they asked themselves why he should have chosen such an out-of-the-way corner of the world as Nazareth, and how he could be contented with such poverty and hardship. When, in fulfillment of the promise of the Most Great Name, the gates of the prison were flung wide, and all the friends and travelers could enter and leave the fortress town in peace and with respect, Nabil of Cain would journey to see Baha'u'llah once in every month. However, as commanded by him, he continued to live in Nazareth, where he converted a number of Christians to the faith, and there he would weep by day and night over the wrongs that were done to Baha'u'llah. His means of livelihood was his business partnership with me. That is, I provided him with a capital of 3 krans. Footnote, the kran was 20 shahis, or almost 8 cents. End of footnote. With it he bought needles, and this was his stock in trade. The women of Nazareth gave him eggs in exchange for his needles, and in this way he would obtain 30 or 40 eggs a day, 3 needles per egg. Then he would sell the eggs and live on the proceeds. Since there was a daily caravan between Acha and Nazareth, he would refer to Acha Riza each day for more needles. Glory be to God, he survived 2 years on that initial outlay of capital, and he returned thanks at all times. You can tell how detached he was from worldly things by this one fact. The Nazarenes used to say it was plain to see from the old man's manner and behavior that he was very rich, and that if he lived so modestly, it was only because he was a stranger in a strange place, hiding his wealth by setting up as a peddler of needles. Whenever he came into the presence of Baha'u'llah, he received still more evidences of favor and love. For all seasons he was a close friend and companion to me. When sorrows attacked me, I would send for him, and then I would rejoice just to see him again. How wonderful his talk was, how attractive his society. Bright of face he was, free of heart, loosed from every earthly tie, always on the wing. Toward the end he made his home in the most great prison, and every day he entered the presence of Baha'u'llah. On a certain day, walking through the bazaar with his friends, he met a gravedigger named Haji Ahmad. Although in the best of health, he addressed the gravedigger and laughingly told him, "Come along with me." Accompanied by the believers and the gravedigger, he made for Nabiullah Salih. Here he said, "O Haji Ahmad, I have a request to make of you. When I move on out of this world and into the next, dig my grave here beside the purest branch." Footnote, Mirza Mehdi, son of Baha'u'llah, who, praying one evening on the barracks roof, fell to his death. End of footnote. "This is the favor I ask." So saying, he gave the man a gift of money. That very evening, not long after sunset, word came that Nabil of Cain had been taken ill. I went to his home at once. He was sitting up and conversing. He was radiant, laughing, joking, but for no apparent reason the sweat was pouring off of his face. It was rushing down. Except for this, he had nothing the matter with him. The perspiring went on and on. He weakened, lay in his bed, and toward morning died. Baha'u'llah would refer to him with infinite grace and loving kindness, and revealed a number of tablets in his name. The Blessed Beauty was wont, after Nabil's passing, to recall that ardor, the power of that faith, and to comment that here was a man who had recognized him prior to the advent of the Bab. All hail to him for this wondrous bestowal. Blessedness awaiteth him and a goodly home, and God will single out for his mercy whomsoever he willeth. The Quran 13:28, 2:99, and 3:67. Syed Muhammad Taqi Mashadi. Muhammad Taqi came from the village of Mashhad. When still young, he learned of the faith of God. In holy ecstasy, his mind turned heavenward, and his heart was flooded with light. Divine grace descended upon him. The summons of God so enraptured him that he threw the peace of Mashhad to the winds. Leaving his kinfolk and children, he set out over the mountains and desert plains, passed from one halting place to the next, came to the seashore, crossed over the sea, and at last reached the city of Haifa. From there he hastened on to Acha and entered the presence of Baha'u'llah. In the early days he opened a small shop in Haifa and carried on some trifling business. God's blessing descended upon it, and it prospered. That little corner became the haven of the pilgrims. When they arrived, and again at their departure, they were guests of the high-minded and generous Muhammad Taqi. He also helped to manage the affairs of the believers and would get together their means of travel. He proved unfailingly reliable, loyal, worthy of trust. Ultimately, he became the intermediary through whom tablets could be sent away and mail from the believers could come in. He performed this service with perfect dependability, accomplishing it in a most pleasing way, scrupulously dispatching and receiving the correspondence at all times. Trusted by everyone, he became known in many parts of the world and received unnumbered bounties from Baha'u'llah. He was a treasury of justice and righteousness, entirely free from any attachment to worldly things. He had accustomed himself to a very spare way of life, caring nothing for food or sleep, comfort or peace. He lived all alone in a single room, passed the nights on a couch of palm branches, and slept in a corner. But to the travelers he was a spring in the desert. For them, he provided the softest of pillows and the best table he could afford. He had a smiling face, and by nature was spiritual and serene. After the day star of the Supreme Concourse had set, Syed Manshadi remained loyal to the covenant, a sharp sword confronting the violators. They tried every ruse, every deceit, all their subtlest expedients. It is beyond imagining how they showered favors on him and what honors they paid him. What feasts they prepared, what pleasures they offered, all this to make a breach in his faith. Yet every day he grew stronger than before, continued to be staunch and true, kept free from every unseemly thought, and shunned whatever went contrary to the covenant of God. When they finally despaired of shaking his resolve, they harassed him in every possible way and plotted his financial ruin. He remained, however, the quintessence of constancy and trust. When, at the instigation of the violators, Abdul Hamid began his opposition to me, I was obliged to send Mashadi away to Port Said, because he was widely known among the people as a distributor of our mail. I then had to relay the correspondence to him through intermediaries who were unknown, and he would send the letters on as before. In this way, the treacherous and the hostile were unable to take over the mail. During the latter days of Abdul Hamid, when a commission of investigation appeared, and, urged on by those familiars turned strangers, made plans to tear out the holy tree by the roots, when they determined to cast me into the depths of the sea or banish me to the Fezzan, and this was their settled purpose, and when the commission accordingly tried their utmost to get hold of some document or other, they failed. In the thick of all that turmoil, with all the pressures and restraints and the foul attacks of those persons who were pitiless as Yazid, still the mail went through. Footnote: Yazid, son of Muawiyah, Umayyad caliph, by whose order the Imam Hussein was martyred. End of footnote. For many long years, Syed Manshadi befittingly performed this service in Port Said. The friends were uniformly pleased with him. In that city he earned the gratitude of travelers, placed those who had immigrated in his debt, brought joy to the local believers. Then the heavy heat of Egypt proved too much for him. He took to his bed and in a raging fever cast off the robe of life. He abandoned Port Said for the kingdom of heaven and rose up to the mansions of the Lord. Syed Manshadi was the essence of virtue and intellect. His qualities and attainment were such as to amaze the most accomplished minds. He had no thought except of God, no hope but to win the good pleasure of God. He was the embodiment of, quote, "Make all my song one single praise of thee, forever keep me faithful in thy service," unquote. May God cool his feverish pain with the grace of reunion in the kingdom, and heal his sickness with the balm of nearness to him in the realm of the All-Beauteous. Upon him be the glory of God, the Most Glorious. Muhammad Ali Sabak of Yazd. Early in youth, Muhammad Ali Sabak became a believer while in Iraq. He tore away hindering veils and doubts, escaped from his delusions, and hastened to the welcoming shelter of the Lord of Lords. A man to outward seeming without education, for he could neither read nor write, he was of sharp intelligence and a trustworthy friend. Through one of the believers, he was brought into the presence of Baha'u'llah and was soon widely known to the public as a disciple. He found himself a corner to live in, close beside the house of the Blessed Beauty, and mornings and evenings would enter the presence of Baha'u'llah. For a time, he was supremely happy. When Baha'u'llah and his retinue left Baghdad for Constantinople, Akh Muhammad Ali was of that company, and fevered with the love of God. We reached Constantinople, and since the government obliged us to settle in Adrianople, we left Muhammad Ali in the Turkish capital to assist the believers as they came and went through that city. We then went on to Adrianople. This man remained alone, and he suffered intense distress, for he had no friend, nor companion, nor anyone to care for him. After 2 years of this, he came on to Adrianople, seeking a haven in the loving kindness of Baha'u'llah. He went to work as a peddler, and when the great rebellion began, and the oppressors drove the friends to the extreme of adversity, he too was among the prisoners and was exiled with us to the fortress at Akka. Footnote: the rebellion of Mirza Yahya, who had been named provisional chief of the Babi community. The Bab had never appointed a successor or vice-regent, instead referring his disciples to the imminent advent of his promised one. In the interim, a virtual unknown was, for security reasons, made the ostensible leader. Following his declaration in 1863 as the promised one of the Bab, Baha'u'llah withdrew for a time in Adrianople to allow the exiles a free choice as between him and this unworthy half-brother whose crimes and follies had threatened to destroy the infant faith. Terrified at being challenged to face Baha'u'llah in a public debate, Mirza Yahya refused and was completely discredited. As Baha'i history has repeatedly demonstrated, this crisis too, however grievous, resulted in still greater victories for the faith, including the rallying of prominent disciples to Baha'u'llah and the global proclamation of Baha'u'llah's mission in his tablets to the Pope and kings. End of footnote. He spent a considerable time in the Most Great Prison, after which Baha'u'llah desired him to leave for Sidon, where he engaged in trade. Sometimes he would return and be received by Baha'u'llah, but otherwise he stayed in Sidon. He lived respected and trusted, a credit to all. When the supreme affliction came upon us, he returned to Akka and passed the remainder of his days near the holy tomb. The friends, one and all, were pleased with him, and he was cherished at the holy threshold. In this state he soared to abiding glory, leaving his kin to mourn. He was a kind man, an excellent one, content with God's will for him, thankful, a man of dignity, long-suffering. Upon him be the glory of the All-Glorious. May God send down upon his scented tomb in Akka tears of celestial light. Abdul Ghaffar of Isfahan. Another of those who left their homeland to become our neighbors and fellow prisoners was Abdul Ghaffar of Isfahan. He was a highly perceptive individual who, on commercial business, had traveled about Asia Minor for many years. He made a journey to Iraq, where Akh Muhammad Ali of Sa'd, Isfahan, brought him into the shelter of the faith. He soon ripped off the bandage of illusions that had blinded his eyes before, and he rose up winging to salvation in the heaven of divine love. With him, the veil had been thin, almost transparent, and that is why, as the first word was imparted, he was immediately released from the world of idle imaginings and attached himself to the one who is clear to see. On the journey from Iraq to the great city, Constantinople, Abdul Ghaffar was a close and agreeable companion. He served as interpreter for the entire company, for he spoke excellent Turkish, a language in which none of the friends was proficient. The journey came peacefully to an end, and then, in the great city, he continued on as a companion and friend. The same was true in Adrianople, and also when, as one of the prisoners, he accompanied us to the city of Haifa. Here the oppressors determined to send him to Cyprus. He was terrified and shouted for help, for he longed to be with us in the most great prison. Footnote: Mirza Yahya had not been banished from Persia. Now, however, he was being exiled from Adrianople to Cyprus, and Abdul Ghaffar was one of the four companions condemned to go with him. End of footnote. When they held him back by force from high up on the ship, he threw himself into the sea. This had no effect whatever on the brutal officers. After dragging him from the water, they held him prisoner on the ship, cruelly restraining him and carrying him away by force to Cyprus. He was jailed in Famagusta, but one way or another managed to escape and hastened to Acha. Here, protecting himself from the malevolence of our oppressors, he changed his name to Abdullah. Sheltered within the loving kindness of Baha'u'llah, he passed his days at ease and happy. But when the world's great light had set, to shine on forever from the all-luminous horizon, Abdul Ghaffar was beside himself and a prey to anguish. He no longer had a home. He left for Damascus and spent some time there, pent up in his sorrow, mourning by day and night. He grew weaker and weaker. We dispatched Haji Abbas there to nurse him and give him treatment and care, and send back word of him every day. But Abdul Ghaffar would do nothing but talk unceasingly at every hour with his nurse and tell how he longed to go his way into the mysterious country beyond. And at the end, far from home, exiled from his love, he set out for the holy threshold of Baha'u'llah. He was truly a man long-suffering and mild, a man of good character, good acts, and goodly words. Greetings and praise be unto him, and the glory of the All-Glorious. His sweet-scented tomb is in Damascus. Ali Najaf Abadi. Also among the immigrants and near neighbors was Akha Ali Najaf Abadi. When this spiritual young man first listened to the calls of God, he set his lips to the holy cup and beheld the glory of the speaker on the mount. And when, by the grace of the light, he had attained positive knowledge, he journeyed to the most great prison, where he witnessed the substance of knowledge itself and arrived at the high station of indubitable truth. For a long time he remained in and about the sacred city. He became the proverbial Habibullah, the merchant, and spent his days relying upon God in supplication and prayer. He was a man meek, quiet, uncomplaining, steadfast, in all things pleasing, worthy of praise. He won the approval of all of the friends and was accepted and welcome at the holy threshold. During his latter days, when he felt that a happy end was in store for him, he again presented himself at the holy city of the most great prison. Upon arrival, he fell ill, weakened, passed his hours in supplicating God. The breath of life ceased within him. The gates of flight to the supreme kingdom were flung wide. He turned his eyes away from this world of dust and went onward to the holy place. Ali Najaf Abadi was tender and sensitive of heart, at all times mindful of God and remembering him, and toward the close of his life, detached, without stain, free from the contagion of this world. Sweetly he gave up his corner of the earth and pitched his tent in the land beyond. May God send upon him the true savors of forgiveness, brighten his eyes with beholding the divine beauty in the kingdom of splendors, and refresh his spirit with the musk-scented winds that blow from the Abha realm. Unto him be salutation and praise. His sweet and holy dust lies in Acha. This is page 62. The next memorial will be on side 2. Please turn the tape.